and John Tenney. Podcasting since 2005. You are listening to Gamer Tag Radio with your hosts Godfrey, Pete Rock, Paris, Pasta.
I won this club.
Please welcome your host.
Welcome to Gamer Tag Radio, episode 466. This is your host, Godfrey, and we have this week Paris. Paris, look, you're the first and only person.
I know, this time I can't complain because I'm the only one. So.
Yeah, maybe we'll see next week.
Yeah.
But also, Pawson is going to be joining us. We're going to be reviewing Dying Light later on in the show. It's a great, great conversation. So I hope you guys stay tuned for that. Head over to GamerTagRadio.com. Post your comments and feedback and listen to our past episodes. Also, give us a call, 786-273-7GTR. That's 786-273-7GTR. Email us, fanmail at gamertagradio.com. So, Paris, what were like the first topic you would like to talk about?
You know, one thing I want to go back to from last week, because there was just so much going on with that Microsoft event and everything. We kind of skipped over a few things. I want to go back to just the relevance that Phil Spencer pretty much confirmed that Windows 10 will be coming to Xbox One this year, which, again, that's part of the reason they're going to be able to have just the universal apps across all platforms, which I think is great for development.
And great for everybody. Yeah.
Yeah. And the fact that DirectX 12 is also going to be coming to Windows 10 and to Xbox One. I think that, I mean, that's huge because they had a demo and everything and they showed the difference between DirectX 11 and DirectX 12. So just to make it short and sweet, what that means for us as gamers is we're going to see better, just graphically, the quality of games will improve on the Xbox One. I mean, to be honest with you, there's anything wrong with it right now, but they're going to get even better as time goes on. So it's a great time. It's really a great time because with Microsoft, let me put it this way. I've been very down on Microsoft as a whole the last few years. Windows 8, like I said, has just been a complete debacle. And just a lot of the choices that they've made the past few years have been head scratchers. Yeah. But, you know, it's almost like once Steve Ballmer left and they got new leadership in place. And just, you know, on the Xbox side, obviously Phil Spencer was put in to head Xbox. He completely changed the Xbox division's philosophy. They're focused completely on gaming at this point. And then when we look at Microsoft on the Windows side, the things that they're doing with Windows 10, the things that they're starting to do with their own apps. Like, I just installed that new Outlook app on my Android phone and on my iPad. It's fantastic. It's the best mail app I've used on really? Either one. Oh yeah. I ditch Mailbox, I ditch the Gmail app, and I'm using that exclusively right now for my Exchange and for my Gmail. It's great. I love it. I suggest if you haven't tried it yet, download it. It's free. And that goes to the point. Microsoft isn't excluding all this stuff to just their platforms. They're going to Android, they're going to iOS, you know, they're on the PC side. I mean, they're not, like, as far as Steam goes, they're embracing Steam now. Dude, it's great. It's really great for just gaming and computing as a whole.
Yeah, definitely. Like, here's the thing. Like, Apple, you know, they're strictly only concentrating on the iOS devices. But I like what Microsoft is doing. They're going beyond just PC, beyond, you know, Microsoft products. Why not go for, you know, create products for Android and also for iOS devices? I mean, it's a different world now. You know, I think by them doing that, I think that's a great, great thing, man. You know what I'm saying? So I'm very curious about that whole Outlook. Like, I'm probably going to be downloading it soon for my phone and for my iPad, you know.
I would say definitely try it.
It's cool that they change the whole, like, Microsoft. They've been changing the whole company overall for the past, like, year or so. I think that's great.
Yeah, really again, it's the new leadership that's in place right now. I mean, he's completely changed the philosophy and the direction that the company's going. I mean, they're focusing more on software and services and less on we need to have the greatest piece of hardware and we need to make everything great that we do exclusive to that hardware. Now, I'll say the other thing, they are seriously making me consider a Surface tablet. I never thought I would consider a Surface tablet, but I think when the new Surface comes out, I'm going to be paying a lot of attention to that. Cause I mean, I've had my iPad now for a couple of years since, you know, the new Air came out, and I'm probably going to wind up upgrading here in the next year or so. So I may not even go iPad next time. I might go Surface. I really might.
You know, what's something funny about that? Like, I haven't even turned on my iPad in 2 months, and I've been using a lot more my Note 4.
Right.
I don't know. I think I'm kind of done with the whole iOS.
Well, you know what?
Not completely, but yeah. You know, I don't know. Like, there's other devices that I feel like it has better features, better things, you know, and I'm just excited with that, you know. So I'm kind of curious why you decided to maybe want to make the purchase to buy the Surface.
Well, let's backtrack for a second, because and I know this is a gaming show, but we're talking tech stuff real quick. But like the sales numbers themselves prove out that iPad sales have declined here in the last year. So people are simply not buying iPads. I just, like, this year I saw zero incentive to buy one because there were no new features that made any sense to me. I also made the decision to jump from having an iPhone over to Android. I have an LG G3 now, and I love it. I love Android. It's great. It fills all my needs. It has that big, beautiful screen. And like you said, because that screen is so big, I find myself using my iPad less and less. You know what I mean? But mm-hmm. Going back to the Surface, the reason I would be interested in the Surface is because if what Microsoft is selling me in that last that press conference they had last week, you know, the tech event they had last week, Windows 10 is just going to be, you're going to be able to have Windows 10, like I said, with universal apps. I can literally go from being productive on my desktop with Windows 10 and go right over to the tablet. Same apps, you know, with the cloud and everything. I'm continuing being productive on the tablet. If I need to attach a keyboard to it and turn it into a laptop, I can. So I think I'm looking at it more from, you know, from my job wise versus just, you know, personal wise, that I would consider now getting a Surface. And then just throw in the fact that it can do everything that an iPad pretty much can do as well. I can have the best of both worlds. I can be productive in a work environment, and I can use it also in my leisure. So if they nail it and hit the tech specs that I want to see, you know, in the next version of it later this year, I'm seriously considering getting one. And I've been playing around with Windows 10 because, you know, the tech preview is out now. I like it.
Yeah.
I like it enough to the point where, if you didn't tell me this was a beta, I could see me installing this on my desktop, on my primary desktop, even in its current state. And I know it still has some bugs. So they're for sure moving in the right direction. And just tying this all the way back into gaming, you know, the Xbox app that's on there, I see the potential of what that can be down the road. And when we can start streaming games back and forth across it, I mean, it's going to be a hit. And that's why, you know, I said a little bit last week, and we've been talking offline, I see no reason for a Steam machine anymore. And there was even a few articles, like I know PC World put one out today. They're talking about it. The Steam machine is becoming less and less relevant by the day because of what Microsoft is doing with Windows 10. And, yep, you know, yep. Valve had their window. They, you know, no pun intended, but they had their window to get a Steam machine out and have it be relevant and, you know, make Steam OS a thing. But Microsoft has now caught them, and they're going to very well surpass them. So just speaking from a Valve point of view, GDC is huge for them because they need to sell people on Steam OS. They need to sell us on this new controller, and they need to sell developers on why they should be porting their games and developing new games for Linux, and more importantly for Steam OS. Because right now, where's the incentive? Right, you know, most developers put out all their games on a Windows platform. Microsoft has recommitted themselves to making Windows a gaming platform. So why would they switch? Makes no sense.
Yeah, and here's the thing too. Like, I feel like Valve took way too long. Like, remember there was a time that the hype was just like up there when it comes to the Steam and Steambox, and everybody was talking about it. Everybody was really, really excited. But then they just stayed quiet for months and months. And I mean, eventually, you know how it is. Like, the attention span from people, they're gonna move on to something else. And now that Microsoft announced this this new you know, features for Windows 10, people are gonna go with that. Having PC games stream to Xbox One, I think that's gonna be a game changer, big time. You know, I know they've done that with devices like like Android, that you could stream your PC games to, like the Shield or.
Well, you can do it with tablet. Steam right now. It's possible right now. I can do it right now.
But it's very laggy, though. Like, it's a very laggy experience.
No, I wouldn't say that. It's
people that I know that have it. They're not too impressed with it. Like, they feel like it could be better.
No, that I agree. It could be better, but it does work. Like, I've played Portal 2 streaming it in my house via Steam. It does work. It just doesn't work well enough that I'm going to now just, you know, use that as to play all my games. We're still bugs to work out. So I agree on that. And Microsoft has to absolutely nail that when they roll it out for Windows 10 and, you know, via the Xbox app. But the other encouraging thing is, like we're, you know, we're talking death of Steam Machine and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, Microsoft and Valve, they've acknowledged that, yeah, Microsoft has worked closely with Steam when it comes to Windows 10, because I think a lot of the thing with Steam OS was Windows 8 was just so piss poor that Gabe Newell threw his hands up and said, this is atrocious. I'm just going to build my own platform then if this is what the direction Microsoft is going to go. But now that it seems Microsoft has recommitted themselves to gaming, I wouldn't be surprised if Valve just went ahead and scrapped all their plans that they had for Steam OS and just stick to Windows. Because again, the fundamental thing about Steam OS is you're asking developers to now either not develop for the largest platform with the most users in Windows, or to also continue to develop for that, but then have another team to also develop for Linux. So to split their efforts, that's a lot to ask of a development company when it comes to PC gaming, not to mention most of your high profile games also show up on Xbox One and PlayStation and Nintendo, etc. So if Windows shows this commitment, because look, I think we can all agree on the PC side, Steam is the platform you need to go to. Forget Origin, forget all the rest of them. Steam is the number one platform for PC gaming. Yep. If Windows is committed to this now, if Windows 10 turns out to be this great gaming platform, then yeah, I personally just don't see SteamOS ever getting any kind of footing, and Valve will just commit themselves to gaming on Windows, which at the end of the day, it makes the most sense because, you know, it's a platform that most everyone uses, and it's just easy to pick up for the average consumer. Just, you know, install it and go, versus having to worry about Linux, which could have all kind of, you know, different technical hurdles and issues that people have to overcome.
You know, we're going to change topics very quick.
No, we're going to talk. No, we're talking tech. This is where you're Leo Laporte. This Week in Tech. Let's go.
This Week in Tech. No, Paris says one thing we didn't even mention. We were on the front page of iTunes, man. I totally forgot to mention that, man. But it's been a very strange and crazy week for us. So having us, you know, on the front page of iTunes for the first time in 10 years, that's pretty cool. Like, shout out to the whole iTunes podcast team, you know, for making that happen, man. That was very cool and nice of them to do that, you know?
Yeah. I mean, so it's something I'm happy to see and I'm proud of, but even more so for you. Cause you know, obviously Gamertag Radio is your baby and you've been here since day one. I mean, it's a huge accomplishment, you know, to be able to get on the front page of iTunes, that Apple recognize what we're doing here with this podcast and thought it worthy enough to be featured to, at this point, billions of people. I mean, that's how huge iTunes is. I mean, it reaches people all over the world. And the fact that Gamertag Radio is front and center on that. Look, we're right next to Serial. Serial is the number one podcast in the world, and we're right next to it. So it's a huge accomplishment, and I'm very happy about it.
Yeah. And shout out to Agent. Agent was on
Agent
also
M.
the front page today. Yeah. Today they posted This Week in Marvel, I believe that's the name of the podcast.
I believe that's right.
Yeah, you're right. All right, so yeah, he's in the front page also of iTunes.
You know, like I was joking on Twitter, and it's still hilarious to me to this day. We did a podcast. This is when I was still doing Uncle Gamer. You and I did that roundtable podcast. We're at a gaming event here in Los Angeles, and Agent M was there. I had no clue who he was. I just... excuse me. Oh, he's just some dude from Marvel. Never put two and two together. And it was like after the event, I found out who he was. And I was like, what? I was sitting there talking to dude the whole time. I had no idea. Crazy. So, yeah,
and he was just there like
observing,
listening to, yeah, observing everything, like just everything we had to say about like the whole, you know, press versus community. Oh, man, that was a crazy, crazy round table.
God, that was what, 7 years, 6-7 years ago?
Was it?
That was like two. That was like, because that was before Iron Man came out, right?
Dude,
I want to say, yeah, dude, this is a long time ago. We're getting old.
No, it can't be 7 years.
Yeah, I'm telling you. I'm telling you. Think about it. Trina's a mom now. Kid, I just remember, dude, we were so young back then.
we had normal hair before we had white.
Yeah. Crazy, man.
By the way, man, shout out to, now let's go to the sad news. This is like really, really like sad. I heard that Joystick is going to get shut down. And everybody from there, from that team, is going to get laid off, basically. Hey. And I think, I'm not 100% sure, but I think AOL is planning to put Joystick and Engadget to like into one website, I believe. I'm not 100% sure, but here's one thing I have to say, man. Like,
let me pause you real quick, though, before we get into that. Rest in peace, Andrew Yoon.
Yes.
You know,
yes,
wow. I mean, he died tragically. You know, was it today? I can't remember if it was today or if it was
today, this
yesterday.
Morning.
Yeah, just,
I think it was this morning.
Yeah, in an accident.
For those that don't know, Paris, you mentioned who it is?
Like, yeah, he was an editor over at Joystick. He used to be over at Shaq News and some other places as well. I think, if you've listened to some of their podcasts or even like Garnett's old podcast back in the day, I know he's been on there. So it's, it's crazy because it's like I didn't know him, but I knew who he was and I've seen him at E3 and everything. It's just surreal to think, wow, not only is Joystick shutting down, I mean, he actually died today. It's just, it's crazy. Yeah.
That bad day today, man. And so, like the whole, Joystick shutting down, like I have to say this, man, out of all the websites, Kotaku and Polygon, every other major gaming site, like we know them, we know the writers and stuff. And, Joystick always been like the number one supporter of like GTR ever since we met them and started, creating buzz like with the news and everything. They always will post like our episodes on Joystick and stuff. So shout out to the whole team. It's very sad, man. I hope everything works out with everybody, man. You know, they finally could get like, new jobs and everything, man. Cause this is like a tough time to be, a journalist, man, and also people part of the gaming industry. So we always hear stories of people getting laid off and stuff. It's very, very sad, man. You know,
absolutely, so, absolutely. Yeah. And then part two of that, if you want to keep it going,
Sega.
Yeah.
Also, dude, what happened? 300 people laid off, and they're moving their offices, I believe, to like Southern California.
Yeah.
And here's the crazy part. No more console games. They're going to concentrate on PC/mobile games. Wow.
Yeah, it's a wow, but kind of like when we were chatting, earlier today when the news first broke, I'm not surprised. I mean, realistically, and this is no hate on Sega or anything like that. Yes, they had Alien Isolation a few months ago. They've not had a relevant game in 10 years. They really haven't, because everything with Sonic, they've been dropping the ball with Sonic just for years at this point, just left and right. They've not had a big franchise AAA IP that people, was just tweeting about and, just buying in droves in over 10 years. So the fact that they have to downscale and they're moving away from console gaming and focus more on mobile and PC, I mean, they're just doing what they got to do to survive at this point, really.
Yeah. Here's one thing that I have to say, too, like, if it wasn't for the Sega Dreamcast, there would have been no Gamertag Radio. That's the reason why I created an online show at that time, which was called PSO Radio. And then years later, I created GTR, I think Sega has done a lot in the past, like throughout all the years in the gaming industry. They made a lot of things that they were like ahead of their time, with Sega Channel.
Sega Net.
Sega Net. The Dreamcast, even personally, like I feel like the Sega Genesis, the 32X, like all that was like,
it was way ahead of his time. It was ahead of his time. Because look, I'll say this, I'll go on record and say this, and you can send hate mail or tweet me and tell me I'm crazy or whatever. The Sega Dreamcast was the best console ever made in the sense that, like Danny's saying, it was ahead of its time with online gaming, the innovations that they made with the controller, bringing everything to, there was a quasi CD, DVD thing they had going on. It just, the fact that they didn't have the third party support. And I know, we go back in history books, they didn't have EA and all that. That's why they didn't succeed. But I remember back at that time, I had more fun playing games on the Dreamcast than I did any other console. And I look, as far as console online gaming, the greatest day of my life was NFL 2K1. playing it on SegaNet, and I'm like, let me try out this online thing. It's not gonna work. It's not gonna work. And I'll never forget, I was the Tampa Bay Buccaneers going up against the Buffalo Bills. I had a keyboard, and me and the dude were trash talking via keyboard and playing online. And he was like in New York, and I'm here in California. My mind was blown. I was like, this is amazing.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
You're listening to Gamertag Radio.
And you know, my first game that I played online was Choo Choo Rocket. That was before NFL 2K1. And I remember we used to create rooms that was like, you could either play on the USA server, or you could go to the Japan server.
Yeah.
And you could play against them in Japan. So we used to create rooms, USA versus Japan, Choo Choo Rocket, let's go, like 2-on-2 or 1-on-3. Yo, we would just go crazy with that. And I was amazed. I'm like, man, this thing is like amazing, man, amazing. So, and matter of fact, but for those that don't know, my first gaming event that I got invited from a gaming company was the launch of SegaNet. And at the event, they had NFL 2K1. I remember they sponsored MTV for the second year in a row, because before that was the launch of Sega Dreamcast. And they also sponsored the VMAs. I think it was hosted by Chris Rock at that time. I can't remember exactly. But yeah, I was there hanging out with the whole Sega crew, everything, man. It was crazy.
Oh, and another thing about the Dreamcast, it was a 33K modem.
Yeah.
That's how old school this was. And it worked. Yeah, it was smooth.
Wait, I think it was 56K.
No, it wasn't. It was 33. You know what? Literally on the podcast, I will Google this right now.
I think it was a 56K modem. I remember that part. That was a 56K modem. But still, either way, it was smooth and there was no lag. Amazing. 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 So shout out to everybody that work over there at Sega that we know, man. Justin, everybody, man. So
Okay. You were right and I was right. Depending on which model you got, it was either a 56 or a 33.6K modem. I had a 33.6, I remember.
I had a 56.
Yeah.
Oh, I wow. That okay. Up. Awesome, man. Awesome. So look, we're gonna take a short break. We're gonna play our audio review of Dying Light, and once we come back, I believe we have like 2 questions from fan mail, Paris, right?
Yeah.
So we'll be right back.
This is Gamertag Radio. Voicemail 786-2737-GTR.
All right, so now we are going to review Dying Light that just came out for the Xbox One, PlayStation 4, and I believe PC. Am I correct?
Yeah, you were correct on the PC.
Okay, so I'll have Poston J here. Poston, what's going on, man?
I'm doing good. Enjoying my zombie simulation device, for lack of a better term. Yeah. I've been putting quite a bit of hours into Dying Light on Xbox One. You've been playing it on the same platform. We even got a chance to play a little bit of co-op the other night. Really, if we want to just jump right into it, this is my favorite zombie experience since Left 4 Dead 2, way back in 2008. Mm-hmm. Which to me is kind of like the crowning pinnacle of where the genre was way back then. And then it got oversaturated, overused. It really took until Telltale's Walking Dead series to be like, okay, you can do zombies in a different way that's still engaging. But a lot of their games are just like, no, this is easy money. Let's keep making these kinds of games. Mm-hmm. But really, this one for me, full disclosure, I'm a big fan of Techland in advance because they also made the Dead Island games on Last Generation. So I was a big fan of those, and a lot of people disagree with me on that one because those were very technically broken games, and it's true.
It was fun. It was fun. That was the issue.
They were too ambitious for themselves, for their engine, for probably the Q&A they had on hand, so we almost felt like kind of beta testers. So I was kind of bummed by that, but overall, I loved the idea. I loved the design. Dead Island was great because it was fun either single player or cooperatively. This game has the same vibe, but I think it does it a lot better because I think design wise it's a competent first person game. it's a decent first-person shooter. I just got far enough in the game. Well, I have guns now, so I've been playing around with those. This is not going to replace your FPS-style games. But for the slower pace of the game, I think it works well. The guns are effective. They're very strong, limited ammo, tough to use in tight quarters. The melee weapons, which is kind of the more of the focus, which you're spending the majority of the time on, that impresses me, I got to say. I don't know if you knew this, Danny, but you can turn off the auto-aim for the weapons, the melee weapons in the options menu. And I recommend
how that makes a difference.
I recommend doing that because if you have it on, what it is, if you pull a swing back, whatever enemy is closest to you, it's going to kind of arc your swing to go into them. If you turn the auto aim off, then that takes all that away from you. So essentially it's just like, depending on the melee weapon you have basically your arm's length in front of you, which you kind of just have to feel out for yourself. So once you get the handle of, how long your arm is and how long the weapon is, you can get really good at the melee combat of your own initiative because you're the one directing the weapon. You're the one moving dodge feature. I love it. There's so many cool, if we're going to jump into this, you can upgrade yourself. Unlike traditional leveling methods, there is no like overall level you're reaching. It's more of the Fallout system where you're earning perks and they separate it into three fields, which is agility, power, and survival. And then basically each of those is based on what you do more of. So if you're, you know, doing more lock picking, if you're assembling more weapons and modifying things, more survivor points, agility, obviously, is the running and the jumping and the sprinting, and power is killing things. But the way that all meshes together and the way that they keep unlocking new and interesting powers on every tree. So if like every time you get a new point, it really is a hard decision because there's so many cool functional abilities you can have, but you can't have them all. At least not in the long run, essentially.
This is what I do. Like, when I get an upgrade, I'm like, all right, so should I pick this one? Should I pick this one? Mm-hmm. No, I wanna be more powerful. Let me go more of the throwing or hitting the enemy, like more damage to the enemy.
Yeah.
I'll go with that. And maybe the next one, I'll go more on to defend my, a better, like a shield or something like that, right? For the character, I could do that too. Like, you have a lot of options, so you could go back. It doesn't like... It's not like in a way that if you pick a certain perk, is gonna you can't pick it again when you get an extra point.
Yeah, yeah.
Your character upgrades.
And so. The game seems to be well designed because there seems to be a large number of activities to do besides the main storyline, which progresses at a pretty good pace. Good voice acting there, pretty good plot writing from what I've seen. Definitely miles ahead of the cheesiness Dead Island was doing. So at least they're trying to do a serious story.
You said the plot, like you personally, I'm okay with it. It's not groundbreaking or anything like that, but it's decent. It's okay. I've been focusing more on just like doing a lot of the side quests because I noticed that the main mission, the main story is getting a little bit harder. So by me doing the side quests, that's helping my character to level up, get better ammo, better weapons, better everything. And that will help me to continue with the story of the main campaign.
Yeah.
So I've been doing that a lot lately.
Definitely. And, you know, as we've said, and we both of you can you can vouch for this, this game is very difficult. There is no traditional difficulty setting you pick. The game is one size fits all. And mostly that means you're going to do a lot of sneaking around. You're going to do a lot of dying and retrying. But that's cool because, I mean, you start off pretty unprepared for the zombie apocalypse. And by the end, I mean, you have so many abilities catered towards, you know, getting from one side of the city, you know, at night, at day, taking on all kinds of enemies. There's so many different types of mutations for the zombies. And I really like the variation. I love the whole concept of the day-night cycle for, you know, for anyone who doesn't know anything about Dying Light. The majority of the game takes place during the daylight hours. When nightfall hits, it becomes kind of more of a fight for your life because it spawns these things called volatiles, which are these very aggressive, very fast, very almost and very intelligent zombies that can run faster than you. So essentially at nighttime, your goal is to either you need to be sneaking around, you need to be very creative with where you're going, or you need to be, you know, getting to a safe house. So, and the cool thing is it rewards you. So if you are out at nighttime and you're trying to, you know, push your luck, you're going to basically level up your abilities twice as fast. So it doubles all of your XP bonuses and stuff like that. So I really enjoy that. Both sides of the game seem to work well.
I have to say something about that, about the night stuff.
Go ahead.
See, like, this is the first game that I now I'm thinking twice, like, okay, should I continue at night? Should I just go back to the safe house, sleep, wake up in the morning, and continue my adventure during the day? So, because let me tell you, like, playing single player, it is hard, man. Really, really tough. And I personally, I think this is a game that's great for multiplayer. Get your friends together and do missions together. I think that's, this game is more for multiplayer than single player, in my opinion. I don't know if you feel the same way, but the thing is, like, I feel that it could get really frustrating playing by yourself.
Yes.
You know, so.
But again, you know, I like the style of harder games. So for me, I actually kind of prefer it single player because of just how difficult it is and how it forces me to adapt, you know, that survivor mindset. And what's great, I totally agree with you. I love the co-op because, I mean, I had sessions where I played with a full set of four people, which you can do four players cooperative the whole game.
Random, too.
Randomly, too. You can leave your game open publicly. People can jump in, jump out. You know, it doesn't affect you at all. I played with some good friends of mine. The experience we had going through, like, I think it was an abandoned school, clearing floor by floor, room by room, that was like the most Walking Dead like experience I have ever had. And that's watching all the seasons of Walking Dead and even playing all the Walking Dead games. Mm-hmm. So this game actually is cooperatively, it's a better Walking Dead game than I think even the licensed ones. And I'm even including the Telltale thing, which I love as a story design project, but as a game making you feel like, what would you do in this scenario? And more importantly, what would you do with other people? Like, you know, how far would you go to keep your partners alive? Would you leave them if they fell? You know,
you can heal them.
You can heal them. The morality comes in. You're like, you know, I really love the combat, the cooperative play, you know, the tenseness by yourself. Good example is, you know, harkening back to the Zombie U days on the Wii U, that game had a great idea where, you know, if you were lockpicking or trying to opening a door, it was in real time, and you were like, oh crap, I got to make sure nothing's going to jump out at me. Mm-hmm. This game does that too, but it, like, it doesn't give you the vision. Like, it doesn't put you out in a third-person perspective to say, hey, look what's behind you. It's like, no, you're making the decision to lockpick. You better hope there's something in this room with you or sneaking up on you, because it'll kill you.
Yeah, all you hear is, like, sounds.
Exactly. I love that. Yeah. The minimap's pretty fair with you. You know, it doesn't list any of the normal infected on the map, so you pretty much have to go by your sight and your sound. And, you know, if you didn't fully clear that room, or if that zombie, you know, on the floor wasn't entirely dead, that's probably going to jump on your back and eat you. And I enjoyed, like, there's really, other than, like we said, other than the safe houses, which, you know, they start out overrun, you have to go capture them and secure them to give yourself little places at night to hide out. And other than those places, there really is no safe place, because there's hordes of the zombies, like I said, and there's also the human enemies, which are like the raiders, the really bad people of society have kind of taken over, the absence of law enforcement. So, you know, those guys are kill on sight. So I really enjoy the way the game's set up. I like the location. It's a fictional country.
It feels very, very big, right?
Yeah, like it does feel big.
Even though it's not, but I like that at least it feels like, man, I could continue walking, continue running. I could probably discover other things out there, you know? Yeah. So, yeah, I like that. I like that a lot. One thing I have to say, too, like, you know, you have to be really, really careful how you kill these zombies, because some of it will be like regular zombies. Some are very fast, ones. And those are very, very tricky when it comes to, because they randomly will appear. Or if you kill one of those zombies that have like a tank attached to them and they blow up, then that will create a huge sound that every other zombie that is around that area will come and attack you, because they heard that sound, you know, that noise, that huge one. So so you gotta be really careful with that. And there's also these huge zombies that they have like a hammer
or like a piece of rebar. The big dudes,
big, huge, those are really, really tough, man. So I mean, there's different ways to kill them, to kill all those type of enemies, but that's the thing, you gotta be really, really creative, because the items that you find throughout the world, the city, you could also upgrade your weapons. You could probably, you know, create stuff like for fire or stuff like for your health. So it's cool. Like, you could even create something and give that to like your partner, your co-op partner that's playing too in the game.
Exactly. Well said. I totally was going to skip over that. But in an age where, you know, we all love Destiny, but I'm still pissed as hell that I can't trade items with people in that game because, you know, I'm not a Titan. I'm not a hunter. I'm a warlock. I don't need this stuff. This game lets you give anything you have to your teammates and vice versa. So if your teammate's just joining in and you're all, you know, armed to teeth, you can be like, here, man, here's a good machete for you. It's all tuned up for you, good to go. It'll keep you through the next, you know, 5 hours or so. And just you can help each other. And it's I really enjoy that aspect because, you know, it's well designed where there's a lot of cool abilities you can build. Some of them are better tailored to the single player experience. Some of them are better tailored to the cooperative experience. But like, you're probably not going to find any of these things that you're building to be like, oh, that's lame. Most of them are pretty clever with their design, with their function. Like you said, you can add fire or lightning damage or toxic damage. You can add elemental effects. You can put nails in bombs so they blow up and shoot nails everywhere, make everyone bleed.
Kind of like Dead Rising, that type of style.
Dead Rising Fallout hybrid, you know, a lot of customization, a lot of modifying. And you have to kind of micromanage where it's like, oh, you know, this can only be repaired so many times. Now it's trash. Let me go find something else. Like you said, good point about the noise that some explosions make. That applies to the gunfire too. So like, while it's really exciting to have like, you know, a military style rifle or like a handgun, you gotta be very careful where you choose to use it, because I've gotten into situations before where I'll like have, you know, got bored, decided to shoot two of these guys, and then like six more come out of the woodwork, and then I, you know, fault to my last breath, you know, throwing hatchet into people's faces, and, you know, ended up fighting like, you know, waist deep water in the sea because I kept rushing me on the beach. And just little moments like that, they just create themselves, you know. The game is well designed to react to you as the player, and I just like the setup where the sheer number of zombies that you run into is plausible. Like, this is finally one of those games where, like, you know, yeah, like Dead Rising was like, that was cool for its time, and then it was kind of like ridiculous. It's like, okay, I get it, there's a lot of zombies in this mall, but this one has enough where it spreads it out enough and still concentrates in some areas that you feel like this is an entire city that's turned, and like, you know, no matter how many you kill, there's still thousands of dead people in this city. And just has that total bleak, like I said, Walking Dead style feeling where like you're kind of fighting a hopeless battle because you're keeping yourself alive, but I don't really think there's any way you're going to save this place. It's probably going to get, you know, Resident Evil at the end.
Yeah, but I do have to mention a couple of things though. Like, randomly you could be running around and somebody will be asking for help. Hey, help.
Yeah.
It could either be, you know, regular people trying to rob them, or it could be zombies.
Mm-hmm.
And if you save them between your, you know, if you do it by yourself or with a team, they will also give you a reward. Like, they will give you money, items.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty cool. Also, the airdrops. We got to talk about that too,
absolutely.
Possibly. It's cool because you're there running around or fighting a zombie, and you will see like this plane dropping stuff, airdrops. So your controller, if you have the vibration on, you can feel the airplane passing by. And when you look around the map, or you look around the world, the city, you could tell where they dropped it, and you could go after it for running, and you could pick up the item that they dropped, and you have to hurry up because if you don't, then somebody else would take that and steal it.
Yeah.
That's another one too. Now let's go back to the whole co-op thing. Let's say we have four players playing, and we killed a bunch of zombies, and they dropped items. The cool thing is, if I pick up something, somebody else could pick up that same item too, and it's not going to be like, okay, whoever picks it up first and goes away. It's not like that. Like, everybody's going to have a different item with their screen. So when I picked up something, I asked Posse, hey, do you have the same thing? No, he told me, oh, no, I picked up medic, for health and stuff like that. And also, if let's say you're stuck in a level, you're playing single player, and you're stuck and you're like, man, none of my friends are playing. You could also go online and randomly choose a room or somebody that's around that area that's close to the quest that you're trying to finish. You could join their game and continue from there. And when you pass it, it will save to your profile. So, like, you have different choices. Play by yourself, play with friends. And I think it's great, man. I love it. Yeah. I love that part of the game.
Yeah, so, and like you said, there's so many options. And I'll throw this in there, too. It is based on a pre-order thing, so I'm not sure if you have to buy it extra if you didn't buy the game at launch. But there's a mode called Be the Zombie, which basically lets you play as one of the volatile-style super zombies. And you basically, Dark Souls-style, infiltrate someone's world, and you try to go and kill them. So that can be you versus, you know, one random person, or you versus a team of four. And, you know, if you spawn into their world, the humans will see an objective that says, you know, invader has spawned. And, you know, your goal is to go, all right, let's go destroy the volatile nest before, you know, this human controlled monster, you know, picks us all off and kills us. And I think that's a neat thing, too, because it's completely optional. You can play single player. You can turn that feature off, or you can turn it on where basically, you know, whenever you're playing, you have a random chance that someone will join into your world as a monster to come hunt you down. And you can do that just at night, or you can do that any time of the day if you want a little spice to your gameplay variety. But yeah, I mean, there's so many options and ways to enjoy this. I mean, you really would just have to hate the whole concept of zombies at this point, which is a fair accusation, but I would still say if you like zombies, like, this is worth a try. Because, I mean, yes, it's not like the most technically greatest game ever made. I mean, it's still not Left 4 Dead in terms of controls, but that's fine because it's a different approach. It's a more realistic approach. And I appreciate that because there's really no other games that try to do that other than some of, you know, the simulation style games on PC. But it's nice to have these kinds of things on console because I think this is a well put together game. I mean, I've only had a handful of bugs here and there. I had actually one hard freeze earlier today when I was playing, when I was lockpicking, and something hit me while I was lockpicking and froze the game out. But other than that, I really haven't had any issues. The game is actually really, really good at auto-saving. And funny story about this, it's so good that I accidentally, you know, I got my first handgun, and I was like, yeah, I got a gun. And there was a quest, actually, that's like, all right, get this dude a gun. And I'd forgotten about that. So I went to talk to the dude because it was like, you know, go talk to this guy. I'm like, all right, cool. And I gave him my gun. I'm like, no, my gun. So I immediately turn on my Xbox and turn it back on. I'm like, did I get my gun back? And I was like, no, he still took the gun. But because I turned it off too fast, I didn't get my reward for giving him the gun. So I was like, oh, this game is too good at saving. So, you know, that's nice. You know, if you screw up, your power goes out, you know, you get kicked offline or whatever, the game saves constantly. So whatever you've done, whatever upgrades or stuff you got, it will save that for you. You don't have to manually save. I appreciate that. But again, don't let the game screw you over because you're not going to beat the system. But yeah, I'm having a great time playing this. And I mean, I don't see myself stopping anytime soon because, I mean, I'll play through the single player probably at least twice, and the cooperative. I mean, I already have, you're like the fourth person I know who has this game. So hopefully we can convince more people to get on it and play it because it's so much fun. You know, I love jumping in other people's worlds and helping them out because I actually feel like I can carry my own weight in someone else's now. Because for initially, when you start playing this game, it's like, you know, I can't help anybody, man. I have to help myself out because it is tough until you start getting some nice equipment. But yeah, I'm having a blast, man.
Yeah, definitely. I think this is one of those games that word of mouth is going to help get more sales and
definitely.
Stuff, you know. So, yeah, definitely. I highly recommend. I really like this game a lot. So, Boston, you too. So, yeah, make sure to head over to GamertagRadio.com. And if you guys want to play online, hit us up on Twitter. We'll create a room and get together with a couple of listeners, man, to play the game. So
yeah, sure. Send me a friend request. I mean, we think we have, what, 2,000 friends now? We can have an Xbox thing? Crazy like that. Yeah, man, we're good, man. Then we have this 100 friend limit. So add me, Paulston J. Let's play some games.
All right.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Voicemail 786-2737-GTR.
All right, so we're back here. Gamer Tag Radio. That was the review of Dying Light. Make sure to check it out. I like the game. I think it's a lot of fun. It's tough playing it solo campaign. I highly recommend you to get this game and play with your friends online. You guys are going to have a blast, especially 4-player co-op. Amazing. So,
fan mail at gamertagradio.com.
So, yeah, man. So, Paris, we have, I believe, two fan mail. This is from Darren Thomas. Shout out to him. He sent two emails. I think the second one, he totally forgot to add this on the first email. So, I'm going to read it very quick. Hey guys, just listening to the show, and I'm thinking about if Microsoft allow you to stream PC games on the Xbox One, that will help sell the hardware. But won't that be putting a basically competition like to the console? Who will buy third party games for the Xbox if you can get it for cheaper on Steam and still play on the Xbox? It will be great if they did it for the gamers, but I can't see how it helps them to sell games. And the second one, second email, he wrote, hey guys, it's me again. Just finished the latest episode. Good work. Keep it up. I would just like to add, I'm listening in by, from the UK. Shout out to him from the UK, man. He said he would like to know if the DJ EFN album will be available over there in the UK. Yes. If you could go to iTunes over there, you could download it, pre-order the album, or you could also buy it at different like online stores and stuff. So yeah, it's going to be available, man. So make sure to support. Now, the first question, Paris, I can see what he's saying. You know, if there's third-party games on the PC and on the Xbox One, and you could stream the PC games on Xbox One, and it's cheaper on the PC, then isn't it better to get that? Isn't it okay. Competition?
No, it's not competition, because here's the thing. You bought an Xbox One. You have an Xbox One. Microsoft don't care. Because you have an Xbox One, there will be exclusive games on that Xbox One that you're going to buy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So from their point of view, they've gotten you to buy into their ecosystem. You've bought their hardware. It's in your home. You're going to use it. You're going to buy games on it. Now, if you choose to save a few bucks and buy all your third party games on the PC side and stream them over, the average person isn't going to do that. I mean, the percentages just show most people would just go ahead and buy that same game. Just go ahead and buy it on the Xbox One versus buying it on the PC. And then the only way you play it is to stream it over. So in that, I could easily do that, right? I'm in a situation where I have a high-end PC. I could easily just buy the games on Steam, and then I would stream them to my Xbox One and play them in the living room if I so choose.
Yeah.
But chances are I'm still going to buy console games. I'm not going to stop buying console games just because I have that option to be able to stream them. Because again, just like I said, there's going to be a Halo 5. There's going to be, what's the game you keep saying is coming out this year? A Battletoads or something, right? There's going to be things that I'm going to want, or Phantom Dust, for example. These are things I'm going to buy on the Xbox One to play. But at the same time, a Batman, a Witcher 3, buying those on the PC, regardless, it wouldn't matter. Yeah. If I had the choice or not, these are games I want to play on the PC because I can. So I do understand what he's saying, and I get it, but I don't think that's going to stop Microsoft from allowing PC games to stream to the Xbox One. I truly believe the only reason they haven't shown off Xbox One to PC yet is because they want to see what Valve does at GDC before they actually show that off. I think if anything, you're going to see that at E3.
I think they're going to be there at GDC.
Oh, yeah, they will be. Yeah. But like I'm saying, I think the official unveiling of it, they'll wait till E3. They'll do it at E3. Mm. You know, anything they'll do is use it as a selling point to go get an Xbox One. Hey, look, you know, you got all these great PC games you want to play. You want to play Civilization 5 in your living room? Here you go. Hey, take your Steam controller that now, like, you know what? I right here on the podcast, I just thought of this. If Valve and Microsoft are working together, that Steam controller might work with the Xbox One. That'd be crazy.
I don't see that happening.
No. I agree. It's a long shot. But if they're truly committed to this whole PC, Steam integration, streaming, all that crazy stuff, what if? Mm-hmm. I mean, who's to say they don't do that? You know? It could happen.
Well, one thing, though, Paris, I feel like there's going to be situations that people are like, man, there's more of my friends playing on this particular third-party game on the Xbox One than the PC. You know what? I'm going to buy that game. Yeah. You also got to think that way. And, Witcher, the DLC is coming out for that Xbox. I'm going to buy that. So there's going to be situations
exactly
that, yes, you rather prefer to buy this particular game on the Xbox One than the PC. Now, there's going to be games that is going to look better on the PC, or they're probably going to have features that's not available on console, then yeah, you're going to go to the PC. So it depends on the situation.
Exactly. You know? Agreed. So, and then let's not forget, you know, there's, as of right now, there's 18 million PlayStation 4s out there. There's still people that are going to be buying games and playing them on the PlayStation 4, and you're going to be playing games on the Wii U and all that kind of stuff. So it isn't like it's just Xbox One. So there could, I mean, it again, just going back to the heart of his question, no, I don't think this is going to stop Microsoft from allowing streaming to go back and forth. I think it will be a two-way street on that front.
Well, there's another question. This is from Twitter. This is pretty funny. This is from Brian. He wrote, when is Xbox One games for gold going to stop with the indie games?
Hey, I tell you this. PlayStation Plus next month is going to have Rogue Legacy, one of the best games of 2013, if not the best. And that's an indie game. And that's probably the most excited I've been for one of these free games in a long time. So, yeah. You know, who's to say, Mike? Because I think, isn't Shovel Knight coming to PlayStation 4? I believe
I think,
so. I think so,
yeah.
I don't think it's coming to Xbox One yet. Not yet.
But it will.
What if that winds up being a Games for Gold where you get Shovel Knight for free? I mean, well, that's...
I'll be in there.
Yeah. But to answer his question, I think I get what he's trying to say is, you know, where are the, you know, the console, you know, exclusive titles? When are those going to start coming to Games for Gold? Still too new. I mean, think about it. The Xbox One has only been out a year and, what, 2 months at this point?
Yep.
So there's just not enough games yet. To be honest with you, Games for Gold, where you're going to see all these great Xbox One games, you probably still got at least another year, year and a half before you start seeing that stuff. When you start seeing the games that came out at launch start being free for games for gold, like a Forza 5 or, you know, was it Rise and things like that. So, yeah, it's going to be wild because, I mean, look at the PlayStation 4. Their PlayStation Plus stuff is, look, Drive Club still ain't out. And they said that at launch, it was supposed to be, you know, a PlayStation Plus title. They still haven't gotten that right. So you just got to give it time.
Yeah, definitely, man. I think that's it. I think that's it, Paris. So we're going to wrap it up and make sure to tune in next week for more Gamertag Radio. So head over to gamertagradio.com, put your comments and feedback, listen to our past episodes, and let us know how we're doing. Also, give us a call, 76-273-7GTR. That's 76-273-7GTR. Or email us, fanmail@gamertagradio.com. Make sure when you send email or you call us from a voicemail, make sure to let us know where you're from. Where are you calling? When you're sending the emails from? Like, you know, we love listening and reading, like, you know, feedback from listeners from, like, all over the world, man. Not only in the United States, you know. So let us know where you're from. And anything else you want to say, Paris, before we wrap it up?
Yeah, I want to say Crota's End hard mode raid is freaking BS. So I've gotten all the primary weapons I want out of it. I'm not playing it no more. I'm done with that raid.
You're done? Yeah. But are you done with Destiny?
No, absolutely not. Are you crazy? No?
Okay. just in case, you know. It's all good. All right, guys. So until next week, we are out. Peace. Later.
Subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, TuneIn Radio, and Spreaker. Be sure to like us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter. Tune in next week. Thanks for listening.